Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Get behind the wheel of your new Opel at the Opel Open Road event now on at your Opel dealer.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Stephen Kenny, Republic of Ireland senior men's football manager. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire. How
Thanks for coming in. It's good to see you. It feels like no time since the Euros ended. It's no time really. You were at some of the games that had 15,000 people in the stadium, 60,000 fans. You're in Wembley, weren't you, for the semi-final? What was the experience like being there in a stadium with fans?
Yeah, and really Budapest was the biggest experience really, because you went from sort of nothing, not been any fans at games or very few, to I went to Munich to see Germany and Portugal, which was a terrific game in front of 15,000 in the Allianz Arena in Munich. But Budapest was 62,000. There wasn't a spare seat. There was not, you know, there was literally, that was a full house, a full house. And that was amazing to see that. And
was it a bit nerve-wracking as well, because we're so acclimatized now, aren't we, to not being beside people?
Yeah, everyone had to have a PCR test or proof of it. So that's the way it was done. And it was 2-2 Portugal and France. Just a great game, brilliant atmosphere. And it really captured the imagination. It was just a terrific terrific environment.
Did it remind you, though, about what we've been missing out on? And in particular, I'm thinking about the players, you know, our own team.
Yeah, so very much so, because we've given 13 players their competitive debut over the last in the last season, and yet none of them have actually experienced. Like, they dream about playing for Ireland, walking out into a full stadium, representing their country,
with the roar of the crowd.
Yeah, exactly, and they've not experienced that. So this is for them coming into this September window, although it's not full house, it's the start of a chapter for them, experiencing the Irish support.
And what did you think of England's run to the final, Gareth Southgate's management style? I mean, there was some criticism of him, certainly earlier on, you know, about the defensive style that they were playing. What did you make of how he handled the whole thing?
England have an outstanding squad, really. You know, they've got great attacking options, and they were unfortunate. I think overall, you'd have to say Italy, particularly earlier in the tournament and overall, deserved it on the night as well to win the Euros. But England, Gareth Southgate obviously did a very good job, semi-final and a final in two tournaments. But the
you seem unsure about him now, as I ask
you. No, I'm not unsure at all. I'm just saying, like, you know, probably France were the favourites probably overall, and they went out in a shock result, really, with a 3-1 up. France, really. Belgium were high expectations with Belgium. Portugal were the European, current European champions, and they had, a lot of attacking options. So England were amongst that. They had terrific talent, England, attacking talent. But Italy, not so much attacking talent in comparison to those other countries, but maximised everything they had, and they did amazing, really, to win the tournament.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because when England scored the goal in the final early on, that was just lockdown defence after that, wasn't it?
That was the approach that they adopted, a counter-attacking approach, and certainly Italy, to be fair to England, I think their European Championship assault, if you like, was based on a sound defence. They never conceded hardly in the tournament, and they only conceded one goal, and then in the final, obviously from a set play, Bonucci scored. So it was a pivotal moment.
Listen, I want to talk to you about Christian Eriksen, his collapse on the field with the heart condition, because after that you spoke for the first time about what happened to you. You spoke publicly about what happened in 2019 after that game against Sweden, when you were in Sweden, and your own health scare. What's been the response been like since you said that publicly?
I don't know, people are supportive, but it was the impact of seeing, not so much myself, but the effect of people around Christian Eriksen that prompted me to speak on that, because when I visually seen it myself, it was a bit of a shock, because the impact it had on the other Danish players, the staff, just the general public. So for me, obviously it happened in an airport in Sweden, in Glasgow Airport. So to see the impact it had on my staff, and how supportive they were, And when I say staff, I mean colleagues and friends.
Yeah.
They were outstanding,
so,
you know.
So when you saw what happened to Christian Eriksen, did you have a realization, look, the people around me might have been really badly affected by this and I need to, to acknowledge that?
Well, I spoke to them after the Eriksen incident and individually, and just wondered about, you know, the impact on them. And you know, it was quite traumatic at the time for them. So that was it. But we've all moved on, and I've moved on. You know, it was one of those things. You know, I feel brilliant. I'm absolutely in full health, and I'm flying. You know, in relation to everything. So, but just at the time, it was difficult for the people around me. Like at the time, Keith Andrews, Damien Doyle, Colm O'Neill, Jim Crawford, all these people. Fergus McNally, all these people who were around at the time, Kevin Mulholland, all of the coaches, lucky enough, the players were gone through onto the flight at the time, you know.
And you have a pacemaker now as a result of
that. Yeah, I do, yeah. Got fit in Sweden, so I was in hospital in Sweden for a week, and, you know, it's not a complicated procedure, I'm running most mornings. It's not invasive at all. It's worked out well.
And this was a congenital thing that you had, where your heart missed a beat.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that had never been detected. And it was just the lack of electroactivity to my heart at the time. Mm. And that caused that. So
you spoke as well about waking up in the ambulance and saying that you had to be at your wife's graduation the next day.
Well, she's fun. Yeah, she sacrificed so much for me, really. So I suppose the fact that she actually done something for herself, and I went and ruined it in dramatic circumstances.
In going back to college.
Absolutely, yeah. It was her graduation. So she flew out to Sweden and spent a week there. Mm-hmm.
Mm. And does your family need to be checked for this now? I know two of your sons play, don't they? Are you?
Yeah. Well, we're not really focusing on too much on that. They're all young and they're all healthy.
All right. Well, let's talk about what's been happening since you took over. You took over as senior football manager just a few months after that happened, actually, wasn't it? And that was in the midst of a global pandemic. We're about a month into it at that stage. There was a lot of focus on the fact that it wasn't until your 12th game that you had a win. How do you reflect on that first period in charge?
Yeah, well, you know, it was kind of surreal because obviously we had the game against Slovakia, the playoff game away to Slovakia, which was a tough game, and the players were outstanding. You know, we dominated the game to qualify, you know, for the final to get to the Euros. We hit the post a couple of times. We cleared off the line. Players were absolutely excellent, and we lost on penalties. So it was a tough one to take, and certainly a very, very tough one to take. The subsequent two camps after that, which encompassed, five internationals, we had approximately 8 to 10 players ruled out, majority with COVID related cases, you know. So it was a difficult year. I think some of the performances were excellent, including Serbia away and Slovakia away, which are really high standard technically. Some not so. And we've learned a lot over the year. I think we've blooded, you know, we've got some terrific young players coming through the system. You know, I think who've come through from under 15s right through to the under 21s and right into the senior team. Mm-hmm. I feel the last camp was terrific in terms of give us a chance to breathe and actually work with the players. And it was less frenetic. It wasn't COVID induced so much, and it wasn't, you know, only two games in the winter rather than three. So we were able to work on stuff. I think there was a nice balance between the young players we've brought through who are getting a bit more experience, and the experienced players, no more so than the skipper, Seamus Coleman, who's a brilliant leader. And I think we've got a really good balance, I feel. And I think we're excited about the forthcoming window.
But all of the COVID things that happened must have been frustrating for you.
It was a nightmare. And not only that, we know a bit more about it now. Back then we didn't. And then the players, when they, like, you know, you had players being ferried in individual ambulances from Wales to Stoke and Wales to the Midlands, and, you know, the impact on their families. They weren't sure of the impact on their parents, the impact on their children. People weren't sure of it. They lost their club, the places at their clubs, because obviously they were sick for 2 weeks and ruled out. And all of that has a massive impact. And some of the players didn't have COVID. They were just close contacts, and they missed out on like some, like Johnny Egan, Callum Robinson, like some players missed out on 5 internationals
because of this.
But to being close contacts, you
there
know,
was controversy as well about how it was handled, you know, where people were sitting on the plane and they were deemed close contacts. I mean, looking back on that, that must be frustrating for you.
Well, I think they wouldn't have been in any other country, they wouldn't have been ruled out, because we in England, for example, had a 1 meter rule. Everywhere else in Europe had a 1.5 meter rule. We had a 2 meter rule. So the players were 1.9 meters, a couple of them. Right. So they were ruled out. So it was
a public health issue rather than an FAI issue.
Yeah, it was public health. It was a national public health.
You were used to winning games.
Well, yeah, listen, and we'll win games again. And I think that's, we're looking forward now to the autumn wind, you know, September, October, November. Great games. We've tough games. We've got Portugal in Portugal, which are the previous European champions and the Nations League champions. We've got two home games with our own fans. You know, we play Azerbaijan and then we play Serbia. And we've got good games. Portugal, of course, come here in November as well, and before we go to Luxembourg. So we've got we've got 7 games to look forward to.
It'll be tough as well.
In that 3 month period,
yeah,
7 games.
We might talk about that more in a moment. But it comes with the territory, really, in the job that you're doing. But given the success that you've had, then you have on the other side of that people calling for you to be sacked.
Is that right?
Mark Lawrenson said that you couldn't complain if you had been sacked at the time. There were others too. I mean, I don't have to name the people who would have said that, but I'm just wondering how you deal with that. Like, where do you find the resilience going into this job to deal with that stuff?
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm managing quite a long time now. So, I have a clear vision of what I want with this team. I think... you know, we've decided that we believe in the talent of the Irish players, and that we're going to, that we're going to back ourselves over that period. The fact that if you lose a game, there's always a knee-jerk reaction in a television studio or something like that, that's irrelevant. I think we've had success with the under-19s getting to the European Championship semi-final, the under-21s getting to the semi-final in Toulon. We've brought a lot of those players in. Because we believe in them. We've got a core of experienced players who are really itching to play for Ireland. Some of them who are in their late 20s who've not played that many games. Mm-hmm. So I think, listen.
Do you listen to that stuff though? Because it is going to happen, isn't it? It is part of that job.
Listen, it's part of the territory and international management. That's part of it. No matter what country you're in, that's you'll always have that. And when you have... when you have a period of not winning games, of course you're going to have some criticism, and that's part of the job. But that's not what I like. Right throughout Ireland, we support from clubs right throughout Ireland at all levels, and I think there's a massive groundswell of support for the way that people see the potential of the team and see what can happen. And there is a real support around the country.
And
for that.
I know you're really passionate about the potential for this team and the new players, as you have said, you've brought in and given them their first international game, and hopefully that will happen soon. They'll play soon in front of crowds.
Yeah, and on Mark Lawrenson point, to be fair, I don't think he's been too critical. I think that's maybe just one quote. I understand. He was a great player in that. And... I've no problem with anyone expressing an opinion. Mm-hmm. Everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Do you try and seal yourself off from the criticism in any way?
You're never immune to it. I think I've had a fair degree of criticism in my career because it's an occupational hazard. And I know my own mind, and it doesn't bother me.
I was reading today in the Irish Times, Gavin Comiskey is writing, saying the list of unsigned or unused Irish professionals at English clubs is depressingly long. That raises that question again, doesn't it? Whether the Irish players on the international team, whether they're good enough to play a passing game. That conversation happens time and again. What's your own position on that?
I don't agree with that. I just don't agree with it. I think that, we've got a lot of talented players in this country. and you know you can see they're playing it. You know, they're all right. A lot of them are trying to emerge at their clubs in England, and it's not easy playing at the highest level because the clubs, it's a world game in England, and we are dependent on the English clubs at times. We might see some Irish players going to more clubs throughout Europe and playing more regularly. Mm. But I think I have absolute conviction in the talent of the players that we have, and I don't accept the argument that, you know, at times we have an institutionalized view of how we can play. We have a very limited view of, you know, just because if we lose a game, we feel we have to be more direct because that worked in a previous generation. But all of the players are talented and they're well capable of passing the ball. There's no problem with that.
How do you think we can play if you think that there's a narrow view amongst people who write about it and talk about it? How do you see this team?
We can take inspiration from other countries, and I think we can take even inspiration from countries our size. Even Denmark, for example, we've seen there in the Euros, and to get into the semi-finals, okay, they have some players at Barcelona and Dortmund and clubs like that, and Chelsea. But I do think that they've not got a massive pick of players. They've maximised their resources, and they've played a very attractive style of football, and they've backed themselves to do that, and they've been brave in their pursuit of that.
Yeah,
so we can take inspiration from countries like that.
I mean, you could argue that you've been brave as well in bringing in the young players. I mean, some people would criticise that you brought in young players into the senior squad too quickly. Mm-hmm. What do you say about that?
Yeah, you know, I accept the criticism. Like, people feel that, we've tried to change things too quickly. But I think a lot of them are exceptionally talented. I think it needed to be done. I think we will get the benefits of that in the next couple of years. I think in this campaign, the World Cup campaign, and I think for the European Championship for 2024, they will peak for sure. And I think they will a lot of those players will have 20 and 25 caps under their belt by then. And together with the terrific senior pros that we have in the squad.
You're really passionate about your players, their backstory, the fact that they represent, as you say, all parts of society. Why is that so important to you?
Also all parts of society. Yeah, I think I think the team reflects society. I think football speaks to all, you know, unlike any other national sport. Like, it covers, it's a completely multicultural game. If you go to every park throughout Ireland, you'd see it's completely multicultural. I think it affects all aspects of society. I think that's reflected then in an under 15 team, an under 17 team. You see it with multicultural teams. That's reflected in our senior team now. You've got players from all different backgrounds, and that's the way it will be going forward. And I think we should embrace that. And I think it's a really positive thing. It's a new Ireland. And we've seen that now, and I think that's who we are now.
You've said we want to create heroes.
Mm.
It's important for you that not only those heroes are created, but also that they are respected as heroes.
We want to create. To be fair, all the players are all good role models. They, they're all. Except maybe they don't have the profile of some of the players in the past, because the players in the past played with Liverpool and Manchester United and Arsenal and all those great, great, great teams. And maybe they don't have the profile, some of them, but they're all good role models. They love playing for their country. They're passionate about playing for Ireland, and they want to have great nights playing for Ireland. And then, you know, I think, a lot of them have those great nights ahead of them, and then they can think, you know, if we're talking about creating heroes, we want to create great teams, and I think that's what we want to do.
Mm-hmm. Social media, and I'm thinking about the Euros in particular, and the English players who got so much abuse afterwards after the penalty shootout in the final. How big of a problem do you see social media as being for footballers at the moment?
Yeah, listen, it is. We've seen different strands of it. Like, we obviously. We've seen James McLean, you know.
Yeah, we spoke to him here and his wife, actually, yeah. about what's been happening to them.
Listen, I signed James as a 16-year-old at 30, you know, and I had him for 4 or 5 years. I sold him to Sunderland. I was at his wedding. So I know him quite well. Shane Duffy, you know, they... he'd a lot of stuff this year, and then the racial stuff, which has been absolutely disgraceful. Young players in the under-21s getting racial abuse and stuff like that. But you know, it's for governments really to make decisions on that.
What do you tell the players who get that abuse?
Well, you know, it's You tell them not to go onto social media, not to engage in it, but of course they do, you know, and that's only natural, and it's very difficult for them to deal with. But I think, you know, they have to become immune to it, and that's you can never be immune to it, but you just do your utmost to sort of block it out. But I think it's some of the stuff in the stadiums that you see in Europe as well, and you know that that's to me that's even worse. You know, and you know, your wife have a big job, stopping sort of racial abuse in stadiums throughout Europe. That's because that's really upfront and in your face and blatant. Mm-hmm. You know, someone can hide behind a pseudonym on social media, but actually, so in stadiums throughout Europe, there should be greater sanctions to countries or clubs. Yeah, much greater sanction.
So if you advise your players not to look at social media, do you take that advice yourself?
Listen, I'm not on social media. I don't have a presence. I never had. You know, I've never had.
We can all have a snoop, even if we don't have a presence.
No. You know, I do get informed of stuff, but like, you know, certainly, you know, and, but listen, that's, you know, I have to, you know, just focus on the task in hand and try not to get distracted.
You mentioned abuse in the stadiums from fans and some of the England fans booing their own players for taking the knee.
Well, it was strange, and particularly it came from government level as well, where, you know, Priti Patel, you know, actually back to people who booed, you know, which was...
Boris Johnson said he was more focused on action rather than gestures, meaning that taking the knee was just a gesture.
I don't agree with that. We had that ourselves in Hungary where the players took the knee and of course, they were booed in Budapest and, you know, the Prime Minister actually backed a stance and, you know, I don't get that, you know, and there needs to be leadership from the highest levels of government.
Mm-hmm. You've no issue with your players taking the knee, in other words.
Oh, I absolutely backed them. Yeah, I absolutely backed them. I think it's, I don't see it as a political gesture. You know, I think it's humanitarian, and I think it's to just, you know, if they want to do it, I'm completely behind that.
Okay, but politics and sport has been mixing though, hasn't it? I mean, you see Marcus Rashford, what he's been doing, his activism in the UK. Tyrone Mings, he publicly criticised the Tory government, and Priti Patel for the reasons that you mentioned there. Do you think that they should never mix, or are you okay with what's been happening?
No. Well, it's always been intertwined in some way. You know, going back to all of the Olympic Games throughout the years and going through, you know, you can never divorce the two. And there's no doubt that that it is a factor.
Okay. And there was controversy around a reported motivational video shown to Ireland players ahead of the friendly against England. The FAI investigated and they said they found nothing untoward. Now, I don't think you've ever commented on this before, have you?
You know, there was nothing in that, you know, that was absolutely nothing. That was actually a video of the Irish players training and scoring goals that week, and some videos of, and some pass goals from Irish players against England, intertwined with some pieces of history. But it was, you know, to be honest with you, it was absolutely nothing. It was a lot of, you know, it was a non-story.
Someone took offence though, did they, and reported it?
I don't know. I'm not sure, really. Mm-hmm.
Was it right for the FAI to investigate it?
It's old news now. That was over, that was last year.
Yeah.
And, you know.
But I think people are interested in it. It was a big story at the time.
We're trying
to figure out who you were.
I'm not sure why it was such a big story. And that's a bigger story.
Yeah, that it was leaked.
Not that it was leaked, but I think, obviously, I'm not so sure why it was such a story, to be honest.
Because there were reports, weren't there, that Damien Duff left the setup because of how it was handled.
I don't know about that, but listen, Damien's a terrific coach, and that's all in the past now. We've moved on a lot from that.
Is Robbie Keane still with the setup?
How do you mean?
Does he still work for the FAI?
I think, Robbie's a great player, an absolute legend in terms of his number of caps and number of goals. Like, he's been a great player, and he was Mick McCarthy's assistant manager. But obviously Keith Andrews is my assistant manager. So, and Keith's done a terrific job. But Robbie, I seen him actually a couple of nights ago because he got presented with his European pro license as the Damien Duff and as the Vinnie Peart and Keith Andrews and all these all the people who were on that they got their.
So you have respect for him, but he doesn't work with you right now.
No, he doesn't work with me.
Okay, do you have targets for the qualifiers in September? We need 6 points, do we, out of the first three games? Am I getting that right?
I think. Listen, we've got tough games: Portugal away, of course.
And the toughest
game, yeah, of course. But it's a great game. It's one that we should really enjoy, and one that we should be excited about. Really playing Portugal away, you know. I think it's not in the stadium of Light, you know. Which I actually was in the stadium of Light as a supporter years ago when Jack Charlton was the manager following Ireland, it's in the Algarve in September. And, the 1st of September. So we're looking forward to that. Brilliant, brilliant game against Portugal. Then quick 3 and 6 days. So Azerbaijan and the Aviva with supporters, which is our first game with supporters.
A number in your head, the number of supporters you want to see in there?
Yeah, 50,000, that's all. I think, and there's no compromise in that. No, I think, I was at Bohemia's play there last week. There was 6,000 in the Aviva. That was a good start. I know they've 8,000 again. It's September. Maybe 25,000. I don't know, but depending on
decisions. So we have Portugal away. Then we're back for Azerbaijan.
And then we play Serbia. So two games in 3 days in the Aviva with support, and that's going to be special.
And you're going to train the lads in the Aviva as well.
Yeah, we are indeed. Yeah, yeah.
And that's important because you want them to get a sense of place.
Yeah. Listen. If you've 50 or 60 caps, maybe it's not such an issue. But a lot of players have come in with a small number of appearances, so it is the option. You always have an option to train, and Ireland have never really exercised that right because of a training base. But yeah, we want to do that ahead of the games against Azerbaijan and Serbia.
Well, we look forward to it, and thanks very much, Stephen, for coming
in.
Stephen Kenny.
Thank you.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.